Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tucker Milling. Join Andy Schneider, National Spokesperson for the USDA APHIS Avian Health Program, Editor-in-Chief of Chicken Whisperer Magazine, and author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, Chicken Factor Chicken Poop, and Zero Waste Chicken Keeping, as he welcomes top poultry veterinarians, poultry scientists, and poultry nutritionists to discuss the hot topics in the poultry world today, and provide science-based, fact-based, study-based information to help you raise the healthiest poultry possible. And now, here's your host, Andy Schneider.
All righty. Thank you so much for joining us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by our good friends right next door in Alabama, Tucker Milling. So, hey, as you can tell, very enthusiastic, feeling great. I think I've kind of come over the hump of health issues. However, I do have one more surgery on October the 25th. So right now we're just kind of one day at a time, but we do have that surgery on schedule for October 25th. So your prayers are appreciated for that. But once that's done, hopefully I'll get back to the way I was for my first 52 years, pretty much uneventful in the health field, that is. And I'll be okay. So one more surgery to go, and we should be back 100%. But I am feeling just about 100%. There's still some days and when I get real active and start doing things physically that I can tell that I'm not 100%. But for the most part, my daily routine, I'm back to 100%. So thank you very much, guys, for, again, all your emails and your thoughts and prayers and support and all that kind of great stuff. But we have a great show lined up for you today, which I'll do a little bit of an introduction with, and then won't go to commercial break. We're going to try something a little new because we know we've heard from folks that, like, you know, we should get into the topic matter and then maybe go to commercial break a little later. And that's, you know, hey, we listen to all of our fans and suggestions, and so we try to mix things up a little bit. I have been working on the sound a little bit, so hopefully we've had some sound improvement. I've reached out to Blog Talk Radio, and we've tried to do what we can to improve that to make it a little bit better for your listening pleasure. But the topic for today is we haven't really had this as a full topic, and it may be a short show today. We may only run 30 minutes, but I titled it basically Corn for Winter Warmth, Fact or Fiction. So let me back up here a little bit, and this, let's just call it this myth has gone viral over the years, kind of like pumpkin seeds, all natural wormer for chickens, you know, myth, you know, add cayenne pepper in the winter to maintain egg production, just things like that. And so this has been around for a while, and it kind of creeps in, just like throw all the protein you can at them when they're molting. And we know that is not the right thing to do. We know cat food's not the right thing to do. We know dog food's not the right thing to do. And in fact, really extra proteins, you know, during a molt, not even required. So, you know, your typical, you know, nutritionally balanced laying feed at 16-17% is going to be ample. It's a natural process. They've been molting for thousands of years without human intervention. But it just somebody writes something on a blog and it seems to go viral. Same thing with this, the corn for winter warmth. And so you see this a lot, even starting now, where people like, oh, it's getting cold at night. I'll go out in the evenings and give my fill the feeders with corn, or give my chickens corn, whole corn or crack corn or even scratch before they go to roost, because again, this issue of, well, it's going to cause them to go through the digestion process, which is going to provide more heat in their body and keep them warm throughout this cold night, yada, yada, yada. So that's it. You're going to start seeing this, folks, in the blogs and the forums and the Facebook groups. And so I address this with poultry veterinarian. And, you know, in the world of poultry, and most things, but in the world of poultry, you've got an expert with letters behind their name for every little thing. So you've got poultry scientists, you've got poultry nutritionists, you've got poultry veterinarians, you've got poultry scientists that specialize just in the egg, just in this, just in that. So, and they're all going to have, a lot of times you run into different opinions on this show, but at least we've got the information and the reason why they have their opinion. So I have absolutely no idea what Dr. Curran Gehring's response to this is going to be. I just said, hey, let's do this topic, and I didn't follow up the phone call to say, hey, give me a heads up of what you're going to say. So he might say, yeah, this is not a bad idea. He may say, nope, I agree with Dr. Pateski, really not needed. And so to kind of go back, when we addressed this with poultry veterinarian, Dr. Pateski, I said, okay, here's the, I think we were doing a show one day called Answering Questions from Chicken Groups or something. And this was one of them. Okay, so let's talk about this, Dr. Pateski. Hey, you know, giving them whole corn, scratch, crack corn at night specifically to keep them warm. And so he came back again with his opinion as a poultry veterinarian, practicing instructor, professor out at UC Davis. And he was like, the theory of adding corn, whole grains, crack corn, giving it to them and having the process of them digest that would produce some increased body heat. So that portion of it is not myth. Okay. So adding that corn, like so many people do, having them digest that overnight, whenever, the process of that digestion would create some body heat. And then that's not so far off as far as the process of thinking about, hey, maybe I can help my chickens by doing this. But then he turns and he says, but you know what? I still don't like it. I still don't recommend it because of the ill effects of the corn. He said, you know, it's not, sometimes it's like when you take medicine. You take, you know, the doctor feels that any side effects you may have from this medication would be worth it based on the benefit you'll get from that. Okay, so in this case, the negative effects of the corn, even though people are like, it's just a little bit here, a little bit there, whatever, and I know some people overdo it, the possible benefit of that would kind of negate the negative effects. So negative effects being fatty liver disease, negative effects would be poor nutrition. Negative effects would be possible osteoporosis because, again, they're not getting the calcium they need because they're eating that instead of their nutritionally balanced feed, thus pulling more calcium out of their bones because they're not getting it from the nutritionally balanced feed. So Dr. Pateski's view on that was, while the science of creating heat while they digest that, say, whole corn, I see more negative effects from this than positive effects. And because chickens produce a lot of heat themselves. They're what's their body temperature? 103 to 106. They get right up close to each other on the roost. And I forget, I think it was Dr. McCray, poultry scientist, that at one show, and I forget what this is, a chicken itself produces so many BTU, so many watts of heat. And so you get 10 chickens in your coop and they're all up on the roost times however many watts or BTUs of heat. And I forget the amount is a tremendous amount. It's more than a light bulb you could put in there, a little heater you could put in there. So the fact that they already have a higher temperature, the fact that they have feathers to keep them warm, the fact that they are, you know, cuddling, the fact that, and then he added actually as well, that if you can just encourage them to eat the regular old, good old, nutritionally balanced lay-in pellets, and a lot of that has already corn in it, well, then guess what? Same outcome. So the issue there is just if you can encourage them to, say, eat the lay-in pellets, which are going to be healthier for them to begin with, you're still going to get that effect of while it's digesting the lay-in pellets, which if you look probably has little corn bits in it, you're going to get that effect. But you're not going to have all the possible negative effects. It's going to be better for your birds. And you're not going to have the possible fatty liver disease. You're not going to have the possible osteoporosis. You're not going to have the bad nutrition, undernourished birds. And so that was his take and his theory on everything he knows about backyard poultry and small flock poultry. And that view of, hey, I add corn in the evenings to keep them warm. So with all of that said, that's been the perspective that I've been sharing whenever this topic comes up. I just like, hey, according to poultry veterinarian Dr. Pateski, blah, 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 everything I just told you. I said, you do you, I do me, and then you, whatever you want to do, but here's – and so now we're going to get a perspective from poultry nutritionist based on this as well. Now, I have no idea what Curran's going to say. He's going to come in and say, you know, I don't see a problem with it, or yeah, I kind of agree, or here's the issue with that from a nutritional standpoint versus maybe a veterinarian standpoint, but I'm anxious to hear what Curran has to say. So let's get right into it now that I've kind of let you know what one poultry expert we have on a regular basis, his view of this. Now we're going to get another view, maybe completely different. I don't know because we didn't talk about it post-broadcast. So I'm anxious to see as well. So, Doc, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope you're doing well. It's good to have you back.
Yes, thank you, Andy. It's good to be back. It's been a long time.
It has. I'm glad.
You know, yeah, and I'm excited for this topic. It's really a good chance to get to some basic nutrition and I think you made a lot of good points there, and I agree with Dr. Pateski and we'll get into why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a different perspective based on the nutritional value. His issue was made on the being a veterinarian, maybe a health issue, and because I know the veterinarians will say, hey, I'm not a nutritionist, so you'll have to ask them for that. Dr. McRae is always talking about, well, that's a poultry behaviorist. I mean, they got poultry behaviorists that concentrate on the behavior of birds, and they may not know jack about the veterinary side. It's all this kind of broke down into specialty. So that's why I was like, this is great to have Curran on to talk about the nutritional aspect of that. And like I said, maybe a short show because, again, corn for winter, warmth, fact or fiction. But I'm sure as you add in the nutritional issues and maybe if anything we need to, because we know they'll drink less in the winter and eat more in the winter. And so it's almost the opposite of summer when we talk about, you know, well, if they're drinking more in the winter, I'm sorry, if they're drinking more in the summer and eating less in the summer, and we talked about this on a show with yourself, maybe we need to add some supplement to their water because they're not eating as much. But now we've got, hey, they're eating a lot in the winter to stay warm and they're not drinking as much. So however that may affect the nutrition side of it, which is your expertise. So I'll let you get started. I'm taking notes just like everybody else listening.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's always important to, talk a little bit about the ingredient and why it's there in the first place. And because I get afraid that people a lot of times, get a very strong opinion for or against an ingredient, and a lot of times there's not, the bird doesn't really have a requirement for corn or wheat or soybean meal or any ingredient. It just has nutrient requirements, and so the point that you made about birds having a balanced diet and why you wouldn't want to add more corn or anything else, it's because their layer pellets are formulated to provide all those nutrients that they need and not have excess of anything or be deficient in anything.
And like the perfect food. So, you think for design, I tell folks all the time, I'm like, what all do I need to be giving my birds? And I'm like, nutritionally balanced laying pellets, period. And because, think about the people that developed this. They're very smart. They're experts. They have all these letters behind their name. Somebody told me on a guest one day that said the chicken is the most researched. We know more about the chicken than any other species on the planet because it's studied so much. And I'm like, here it is. This is what your birds need. It's the perfect food for them. And anything else you want to add may not be quote-unquote, bad for them, but it's going to mess up that formula a little bit. It could too much, could affect that, have some negative effects to it. But it's. I mean, this is it. And I tell folks, from the time my birds turn 16 to 18 weeks to the day they die, they get nutritionally balanced lay-in pellets. That is it. So, yeah, I like that line you went down. I was like, this is the perfect food for them.
Yeah, and, you know, my guess would be that just about any, good backyard poultry feed is going to be probably somewhere between 30% and 60% corn. And the reason is that, you know, corn provides about 3/4 of the calories in the diet. But it also, just because of the amount, can provide up to 30% of the protein. And that protein is complementary to that of soybean meal. And so that's why a lot of times you see those two ingredients together. You got to remember that the amount of the soybean meal or any other protein source is set to, in balance with the amount of corn or other grain that's in the diet. And so, that's why, when you do add more of something, you're affecting your calories, your protein, vitamins, minerals. Everything's not going to be, the way that it was intended or formulated.
Which then turns into, like, the energy. Because I've always been told, Doc, that, a chicken, when they're eating to meet that energy requirement. It's not that, I need this, that, or the other. I mean, they want to eat to meet that energy requirement. And so that's a lot of times when I've done those videos, time lapse and whatnot, where I sprinkle scratch over lay-in pellets, and it's you can just see, it's not time lapse, because you can see as the film rolls live, you see the scratch start disappearing all across the top of the lay-in pellets until it's gone. I mean, right there live, you can't dispute it. And then so they're focusing on, again, eating to meet that energy requirement. And then once that's done, then they may not eat much for the rest of the day. So if it's, say, just corn, which I guess, helps that meeting that energy requirement maybe sooner or faster, then they're done with all the other good stuff. And so that's something that we've been told a lot of times on the show, that they're, at the end of the day, they're eating to meet that energy requirement.
Right. Yeah. And I think Dr. Petesky would agree that, if they do hit that limit and they then become deficient in their intake of other nutrients, a lot of those vitamins, trace minerals, amino acids, those all play a role in the immune system. So even if it doesn't cause an immediate problem, if that's chronically over a long time, you can have, potentially issues that arise down the road.
Yeah, and you don't see it. People say, oh, my chickens, look at them, they're so healthy, but yet they could be suffering from fatty liver or osteoporosis. And the average backyarder looks at this bird, and they look healthy to me, but yet they may be suffering inside. And I didn't even think about it. That's another thing I can add to that is the immune system, because they're, again, not getting those nutrients that they need. I'll add that to my list when I talk about, but my bird looks healthy. But we can't really see their immune system, and we can't see osteoporosis really or fatty liver as it's developing. I'll add that to my list. I learn everything, and every show I learn something.
All right. Well, so, now we know, why we use corn and some of the negative things that can happen by, adding too much and getting out of balance. But, I thought it'd be good to talk about, probably the main reason, that you mentioned that people think that feeding extra corn is going to help birds in the winter is because of that body heat production. And it's something called heat increment. And so this really gets to, pretty basic nutrition. So it's stuff I haven't thought about in this much detail in a long time. So it was fun thinking about this topic. But when we look at the calories that are in an ingredient or in the feed itself, what we start with is called gross energy. So that's the total amount of Sorry about that. Had a
no problem.
Little tickle in my throat. But we have the gross energy, which is the total amount of energy that's in the seed. So we can you can think of that like if say you have a gas can and 5 gallons of fuel that has a total amount of energy, but we know that then if you use that fuel, the combustion is not 100% efficient.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and another analogy would be like electricity, and we know that you know when say with a light bulb, so it's doing that electricity is doing its job, but we don't have 100% efficiency, so we have heat produced, and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the same thing is happening when we when we consume food, or when our chickens consume their feed, and so from the gross energy. Then we can talk about energy partitioning. And so, first of all, when that feed goes, you know, through the bird, that those nutrients that and those calories are absorbed in the small intestine, then we lose some as fecal energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then what we're left with is digestible energy. So that's any of the calories that are absorbed from the intestine are the digestible energy. From there, we also then lose calories through respiration and urinary energy. In the case of birds, it'd be in the form of uric acid.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we have metabolizable energy. And so that's the number that we typically use to formulate diets with. And so with a lot of ingredients, there's a lab test that you can do called bomb calorimetry to get a gross energy value. And then if we measure the metabolizable energy value actually in a bird, we find that, you know, that's quite a bit less because of losing it through the waste and the as gas through respiration.
So
and,
if I understand that right, uh-huh. You, please correct me if I'm wrong. Is by the time the digestion process is over, the energy that's left over that would be utilized to help create body heat is all maybe. I don't want to put words in your mouth, insignificant, or just by the time it gets to that point. Am I reading that right, that after it goes through the intestine and then the urine part and all that, the last bit of energy left would be the energy used for warmth in that theory?
Yeah.
Or no? Am I just
making
that up?
No. So at that point, so now we're at metabolizable energy, and then that can be partitioned into maintenance energy, or
mm-hmm.
The energy that's required for the basal metabolism just to keep the bird alive.
Okay.
And then we have energy for production, which can then be partitioned into the energy used for growth or reproduction. So reproduction in most cases would be laying eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the remainder, if we started at gross energy and subtracted all those things, the remainder is heat increment.
Way at the very
and
last.
And so that would be, and right. And so I know that is there's probably people that are going to rewind a few times to try to make sense of that. And I'm sure there was a better way to explain it. But I will have an energy flow diagram in the next article in your magazine, so it'll be much more clear.
Awesome.
But long story short, that birds consuming a certain number of calories, and the amount of calories that are available to the bird produce growth or eggs is less than that amount, and part of the remainder is generated body heat that we call the heat increment.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's important for this topic is that the different types of nutrients, especially if we consider macronutrients, such as carbohydrates, protein, and fat, they all have different heat increments. And so, some some folks might remember, I believe it was on a on an earlier podcast that we did, or I know it was in one of the Chicken Whisperer magazine articles when we were talking mm-hmm. about heat stress. And I mentioned that, you know, during the summer, if you were able to formulate your own diet, then you might provide some of the more of the calories as fat. And that's because fat has the lowest heat increment. But then after fat, next would be carbohydrates. And so, you know, we know with corn, the majority of corn is in the form of starch. And there's some protein, but that protein is only about, 7% or so. And if we look at all those heat increments of our macronutrients, the heat increment for protein is more than double that of starch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the point being, if you were going to take a single ingredient and feed it to chickens to try to increase their body heat production, you know, corn or something with less than 10% protein wouldn't even be anywhere near the top of the list.
Gotcha.
And that would, you know, and that would only be if you didn't have any, concerns of making an imbalanced diet and all the other
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. negative things that we talked about.
So if we just kind of created if this was our goal, to create a little bit of heat for our birds in the wintertime by giving them something to consume, again, like you said, corn would be kind of far towards the bottom of the list, and then we would just formulate, okay, what would be more towards the top of that list, you know, and then you have to, okay, well, that, you know, filet mignon or, you know, whatever. It's just like, okay, protein or, you know. So that makes complete sense as well. Out of all the things we could give, corn's probably not even towards the top of the list based on the production of heat from an ingredient.
Right. Yeah. And there, you know, there is something to feeding the whole grain. And yeah, I think from what I saw, that's usually what people are saying or doing
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
is feeding whole corn. And that, you know, that does take more work to digest. And feeding whole grain increases the size of the gizzard because it has to work harder.
Mm-hmm.
Then in a lot of cases, our nutrient digestion is not as efficient. And any time that we lose efficiency, then we increase our heat loss, or heat production.
Gotcha.
So yes, you know, the heat increment off of the whole corn might be a little more than the corn that's already there, but you know, like we said, there's in a lot of cases more than 50% of the diet is corn already,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to be, you know, considerably more because it's whole grain.
And I think that's probably in theory why Dr. Pateski was like, you know, if you can kind of encourage them to eat their laying pellets, they're getting corn that way. You know, and then like you said, maybe, well, I did whole corn because that's going to create even more digestion and more heat. But we've kind of debunked that with the process of digestion. But what was that percentage again? You said earlier in the show, most say bag commercial feed they're already buying in their feed store. What percentage was that corn? If you flip back and remind us again.
Yeah. Well. So in a commercial diet, you're looking at probably 60-70%, closer to 60. In
mm-hmm.
In a bag feed, my guess would be 30-60.
30-60 is corn.
And,
gotcha.
And that's because on the lower end, you know, those are feeds a lot of times that are considerably cheaper than a commercial diet
mm-hmm.
that have a lower plane of nutrition, less calories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why it might be somewhere, you know, closer to 30% corn. But that doesn't, just because corn is farther down the ingredient list doesn't mean that it's a bad feed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can also have the case where, say you're, you don't have a lot of corn, but that grain portion is in the form of, say, wheat.
Mm-hmm. Wheat, yep.
Or even any other grains, you know, could be triticale or barley or something. But the issue that you can run into in those cases is all those other grains have more non-starch polysaccharides, which is your viscous soluble fiber that's non-digestible.
Mm.
And so, you know, wheat's got a little bit more than corn. If you get into the rye and barley, that makes the digester or the contents in the gut very viscous. And so, you know, the bird's producing its own enzymes to try to digest that protein, starch, and fat. Mm. And when that, when those, you know, when the contents of the intestine get thicker and more viscous, then those enzymes can't reach those nutrients as well or as efficiently. So you get much more of those nutrients that pass all the way through without being digested.
I see a lot of folks.
On the other hand,
no, go ahead. Don't let me interrupt you there. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, in a lot of the world, diets aren't based on corn, and they use those other grains, but they have to be used with an exogenous or outside source of a carbohydrate enzyme that breaks down those fibrous components.
I've seen a lot of folks. I mean, it's a pretty good number that they'll often say, "Well, I feed a non-corn diet." Or, does anybody know of a food that has no corn? Or, you know, and a lot of people I've seen, you see it a good bit throughout the years on the forums about, I'm looking for a lower corn or non-corn or whatever diet. So, and I don't really follow up to see what their theory is about that or why they want to do that. But I know that there's a good amount of people out there that or look for that or are feeding a non-corn for whatever reason. I never really went into it too much.
Yeah. But, you know, in almost every case, except, you know, with maybe a milo or grain sorghum based diet. But if you're using one of those other grains, you know, you want to make sure there's a xylanase in there. Or the birds just aren't going to perform as well if everything else is the same.
And then I guess you've got the grains and whatnot that make up the, when I know this from listening to the show, you've got all the, not the nutrition, but the lysine and all of that, methionine, all that comes in that super Vita pack that's added to the grains that are making the pellet. So I guess they get, you know, some nutrition from the grains that are in there, like you said, the corn or the wheat or the milo or whatever the case may be. And then in addition to that, you add, like, I know you guys add a lot of like essential oils and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the Vita Pack to help them get that balanced diet that they need. I see a lot of people, too, say, I'm thinking about mixing my own feed to try to save a little money. And so they just go out and look and say, well, I bought a bag of scratch, I bought a bag of corn, you know, or I bought a bag of this or wheat or whatever, soybean, and, you know, and they just think mixing all these grains together, they might save a buck or two. But then here comes Andy saying, well, that is far from a nutritionally balanced diet unless you add I just call it the Super Vita Pack that's going to give them the methionine and the lysine and all that stuff that they really, at the end of the day, require. Is more than just mixing some, you know, buying 6, 7, 25 pounds of grain and mix it in a big tub, and I've got my feed now. So, and then when they go and see the detail, there's an article I share too from Dr. McCray about making my own pellets or growing my own feed, and it's, again, you read it and it's very overwhelming, you know, because she's all about, this is what you would have to do it right, and how much land you would need, or how much, you know, and then you divide all this stuff, and it's kind of like, a lot of things that we see. It's like, oh, I like to ferment my feed. I just put some feed in a 5-gallon bucket and fill it up with water and wait 3 days. And at the end of the day, it's a lot more science and detail than that. And if you do it wrong and you get any kind of mold spores or anything, I mean, you can have a dead flock because you fermented your feed the wrong way. So same thing with the people that a lot of times, I'm going to make my own feed to save a little bit of money. So I see that a good bit as well. And then when you talk about a VitaPack, you know, they're like, what's that? Or where, can I find that? And so, yeah, absolutely. I've got a question.
Yeah.
Not to veer off kind of what we're talking about. Let me see what time it is. I need to go to a commercial break too. So I will ask this question and then we'll have you gather your thoughts, because you may have to look it up. I doubt it. But and then after the break, because we've listened to our listeners, we're doing one break now instead of one kind of at the beginning and one at the end, and then at the beginning and waiting for the material to really start playing and bring our guest on. About halfway through, we're just playing all 6 commercials or whatever. And that gives folks maybe the chance to do a potty break or to gather their notes or whatever. So my question for you is that, you know, when you look on the back, when you look at the label of the feed bag, I go out here to my Tucker Milling label and get that. And then I may have one laying around here. Unlike, say, our human labels, I don't see calories unless I'm missing it. I don't see calories per cup or per quarter. I don't see calories on there. So my question for you, we'll get to after the break, is that we pretty much kind of know it's standard. Well, the average laying hen will eat somewhere between, we'll say, an eighth to a quarter cup a day. But I couldn't tell you, as long as I've been doing this, I don't even know if it's mentioned on the podcast, how many calories is that? And why wouldn't it be important to put calories per cup or on that label? I know we just feed free choice. That's the way everybody recommends. Have feed available to them all the time. They'll eat less that way than you just taking a couple of scoops and dropping it out there. You and I have talked about that on the show on some shows. But when you mentioned calories, we're like, so how many calories is a hen going to eat in a day based on that eighth to a quarter of a cup? And what do they need? How many calories do they need in a day, and how much are they getting, and how come I don't see that on my feed label? And maybe the answer to that is because I don't really need to know. I'm just filling up a feeder. It doesn't matter to me at the end of the day. But and that may be the answer. But I'll throw that in to your ball into your court, and we come back from break. You can kind of tell us about that. Like, well, the average hen's going to eat probably this many calories based on that quarter cup a day, and it's not on the label because, like you said, you don't really need to know that. It's irrelevant because you're just bag of feed and they're just eating what they're eating. So let's think about that, and we'll go to commercial break. Oops, sorry about that. And we'll go to commercial break, so stay with us, and we'll be back with a lot more of Corn for Winter Warmth, Fact or Fiction.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialists. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of quality incubators for almost 40 years. They manufacture incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity controls and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and receive 10% off your entire order. Order your new incubator today at Brensea.com. That's Brinsea.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Are you dealing with a stinky coop or brooder? Backyard chicken owners are loving Chick Fresh. Not only does it eliminate the nasty odors, but it also eliminates the dangerous and unhealthy ammonia. You can use Chick Fresh in your coop, brooder, garbage can, litter boxes, and more. Even use it in your spouse's smelly shoes. Get your bottle 15% off today by going to coopcarespecial.com. Take back control and say no to nasty odors. The Yardbird Chicken Plucker takes the hassle out of backyard chicken processing by fully defeathering birds in just 15 seconds. Powered by a 1.5 horsepower electric motor, the Yardbird Chicken Plucker can handle 2 8-pound birds at one time, while the built-in irrigation ring keeps your hands free for other butchering tasks. The 20-inch stainless steel drum features 110 rubber plucking fingers that gently remove feathers and dirt without tearing the skin. When butchering is complete, the plucker rinses clean with just soap and water. To learn more or purchase your plucker, visit yardbirdpluckers.com.
Metzer Farms is now hatching and shipping the premier egg layer. This girl is consistently laying jumbo eggs with a higher nutrient density and lower water content than your eggs now. She is an extremely hardy bird and the most heat and cold tolerant egg layer available, allowing for year-round outdoor production. An eggshell unmatched in sturdiness and thickness, making cracks a thing of the past. Increase your health and double your egg profits. Of course, we're talking about ducks. Duck eggs are revered by chefs for their succulent flavor and by bakers for being the better baking egg. Learn more about this extraordinary duck, the Golden 300, or any of our other 35-plus breeds of ducks and geese at MetzerFarms.com and order your next flock from us. Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg's family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for both the beginner and experienced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it's time to order your new day-old baby chicks and poultry supplies. Order online today at StrombergsChickens.com. That's StrombergsChickens.com.
And now we return to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer with your host, Andy Schneider.
Alrighty, folks, I apologize about that dead air during the commercial break. I somehow clicked a button somewhere on the bar at the below is my wife's computer that I use because it's the Mac Daddy, and mine's old turd. But and then the switchboard just disappeared, so I had to go back in and then re-log back in, and I get back into the switchboard. So sorry about that dead air. That was, I didn't have a switchboard to click the button on the next commercial. So if you're just joining us, don't worry. This will be archived into a podcast. You'll be able to listen to it to its entirety anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like all of our 1,200 broadcasts we've had over the last 12 years. But today we're talking about corn for winter warmth, fact or fiction. And the question we left for Dr. Gehring were calories. You mentioned that, but it's often a lot of times we don't hear it. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think it's on the label of the bag or how many calories per cup, and how much fat per cup, how much, let's see, what do we do, carbs per cup, different things like that. We have an ingredients list, and I'm assuming that's the same as our ingredients list, more at the top of the list, ingredient less at the bottom of the list. But what's in the animal industry, I'm thinking now our goat feed, our cow feed, our hog feed, and all kind of the same thing. Is it just because it's in that scenario, it's kind of irrelevant regarding that we don't see something more like a per cup calorie count, carbs, fat, salts, or whatever? And then my question was in that 1/4 cup that we'll say an adult hen's going to eat in a day, about how many calories are in that if they're eating 4 calories kind of, you know, for the day. What say you, my friend?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the reason that we don't see it on tags is because it's not one of the required nutrient guarantees by AFCO, which is the Association of Animal Feed Control Officials. Mm-hmm. And so that's an association that's made up heads of the Department of Agriculture's from mm-hmm. every state or whichever organization has jurisdiction over feed tags and feed ingredients. And so it's you know, it is kind of an independent association, but the FDA kind of goes by their rules as far as ingredient definitions and then nutrient guarantees that are required for each type of animal. And so yeah, most feed manufacturers are going to go by AFCO standards, because there are some states, like we know Kentucky, Virginia, I believe Texas and some others require AFCO standards on their tags. Other states don't care so much, so it really depends on where a company's selling feed into. But, a lot of times they'll just have the required ones, which protein, fat, fiber for chickens, it's lysine and methionine as well, calcium, phosphorus, and there's a few more. But, then I think the other reason is that's something that kind of separates two feeds. So there could be two competing feed products that have a very similar looking ingredient list, extremely similar nutrient guarantees on the tag, and everything on there could be true, but there could be, say, 100 or 150 kilocalories per pound difference in energy density between the two. And so that, I think a lot of times that's one of those things that as a feed manufacturer, if you are making a really good feed that you're proud of, it's one of those things you keep kind of close to the vest. And one of the reasons that your feed might outperform another one. The other thing might be digestible amino acids. And I think you don't see those on the tag for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason that's probably doesn't play as much of a role in it is, on each bag of feed, that tag is a lot of times pretty small, but there's
right.
a cost with that paper and ink. When you're making millions of bags of feed, every extra inch of tag adds up. And so, I think a lot of times it depends on the, whether that's kind of an economy feed or a premium or ultra premium or whatnot as well, as far as if there's any of those nutrients on there that are above and beyond what's required. And other information as well.
No, thank you for all that information. I knew there's a reason. And actually, after 20 to 30 years, probably closer to 30 years since I bought my first baby chicks at the feed store back in 1992, just even to this day, after being into it as much as I am the last 12 years, full-time, USDA, all this, spot feed sponsors, that I just, it's like it's never come up. Like, I need to make sure my chickens have this calorie intake, because we're, as humans, so focused on that. And our animals that we care about so much. And we just, again, I think a lot of it goes back to trusting that feed company and the person with lots of letters behind their name with that nutritionally balanced feed, going, hey, I don't have to worry about any of that. It's in there. This stuff is good stuff. I know Curran and any Tucker Milling customer can talk to you any given day with their questions. I know you're very open about that. And so it's that trust factor. I don't need to know. I know it's in here. I pour it in the feeder. And that's why I switched feeds, because I saw the results with my animals. And I didn't tell you how many calories my cows were getting or my chickens were getting. I just knew that I trusted you. I trusted the feed. I saw the results of the feed. Nothing else really mattered, I guess, at the end of the day regarding that. I've got a question for you. We're going to break records here. This is like breaking news. I've never asked in 12 years. Whether it be whatever feed company I was sponsored by, whoever I work with USDA, all the poultry nutritionists that I've met over the years and talked to and have on speed dial. And so I'm going to put you on the spot, and I don't want you to have to answer, but I think you'll answer this honestly, because I'm sure you, in your position, you talk to other nutritionists at other competitors, at other companies, when you go to these trade shows, when you talk to each other. But I'm going to ask you a question I've never asked any nutritionist ever, and it's crazy. This is going to break the mold. Do you think, I'm not saying, so we won't put it personally. We won't say, do you, Dr. Curran Garing, but, you know, across the board, you're in the industry and you know a lot of poultry nutritionists with other companies. Would you say that the poultry nutritionist at Purina, at Nutrina, say at Tucker Milling, at Kalmbach, at ADM, do you think they're sitting at their desk looking at competitors' labels going, how can I make my food better than that? Let's leave what they have in their feed, and let me kind of not attack it, but, you know, then you formulate your formula. So let's break this. This is like that, you know, something on TV. We're going deep undercover, you know. So would you say that, or is it more of a, I have all this knowledge in my brain from all this schooling. I'm going to use that to develop what I think is the best feed. Or maybe some of that does happen. We're like, let me look at this company's label and let me make it a little bit better. So that's my question. Never asked that before. You know, in the industry, do you think some of that may happen?
I think it certainly does.
Gotcha.
but probably not as – well, I would say that changes to feed products probably don't happen as often as you would think.
Right, right.
And so a lot of times it would happen with a new product.
Okay, a new ingredient, maybe.
Yeah, so if I'm coming out with a new product, like we had our show flock line come out this year.
Sure.
At that point, there's no price that everyone's used to already. It's a brand new product. So, mm-hmm. you know, I can put, you know, anything in it. And
mm-hmm.
and that's a lot easier. But when you have an established product and everyone's used to paying a certain amount for it, you know, even if you find out there's this ingredient that's going to make a tremendous difference and noticeably better performance, if that makes the feed cost 50 cents more a bag or a dollar more a bag,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's a hard sell. And so a lot of times that's not something that she can do.
Right.
But
I can see it being a hard sell because, I mean, I can see mm-hmm. it being a hard sell. I'm paying $13 a bag, and guess what? I'm getting eggs, you know? And then, you know, so now it's $14 a bag, and I'm like, but I've been feeding this for $13 a bag, and I've been getting plenty of eggs to feed my family. So I can see definitely being kind of in this for 12 years and working closely with feed companies. I can see how that mm-hmm. can be a tough sell sometimes to have to earn another a dollar. Why is it more a dollar? Well, you know, pushing that. Well, look at all this extra stuff you're getting. It's a better feed. They got these different ingredients. It's new and improved. But I've been using this for years and I get eggs. I can hear the customer now.
Right. Yeah. And one thing, you know, for me was, you know, going through school, everything I was exposed to pertained to the commercial industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and that's the way that a lot of the new microingredients, the way that they're marketed is towards commercial nutritionists because that's, mm-hmm. you know, where the money is.
Yeah.
And
yep.
so, you know, you see a product and it has a 3x ROI for the producer because it decreases feed conversion by 3 points. So what that would mean is that, say your feed conversion is 1.5. That means 1.5 pounds of feed per pound of weight gain. So, you know, obviously not talking about, in this case, about mature layers, but say if you're growing pullets up. And 3 points lower would be 1.47 pounds of feed instead of 1.5. Yeah. So somebody with 10 chickens is never going to notice that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But for, say, Tyson
yeah.
or, you know, any big chicken company, 1 point is worth $10,000 to $15,000 per week per complex.
Good gravy.
So So that 3 points is like $50,000. Tyson has 30 complexes. You know, that's a big deal. But for 10 to 15 birds, unless you're actually weighing every bit of feed that you supply and weighing back what they don't eat and weighing your birds all the time, two or three points of feed conversion isn't something that you're going to tell, because your feed's not going to last so much longer that it's noticeable, or birds aren't going to grow so much faster that it's noticeable. And that's why sometimes, even when there might be something new on the market, or a new nutritional strategy that there's research behind, you really got to think about how much cost does that add to the diet, and then will it actually be noticeable to the people using that feed? But on the other hand, there are some ingredients that that I've seen other companies use that we now use, and then I've seen some ingredients that I use that then I notice on other labels. And
right.
So there's times when when an existing product is improved, certainly, and that's actually how I've tried to improve our products over the past 6 years that I've been here. Is there's certain times when ingredient costs come down. This whole year they've been through the roof high. Corn's finally coming down a little bit, but there's times when corn and soybean meal price are really good, and so all of a sudden our margin's higher than it was. And so I think at that point, when your input costs decrease as a feed company and your margins increase, then you can either keep it the same and just make more money, or you can take some of that and improve the product. And so that's how I've been able to add things or to increase nutrient density or increase calories, is during those times when I can do it without increasing the price of the feed.
Yep. And those that follow me on my Facebook page, that about twice in the last 6 months, I've done kind of a poll like, okay, what are you paying for a 50-pound bag of nutritionally balanced, laying pellets? And because I was like, because I'm still paying $13.50 a bag for my Kermilling, and I know the cost of stuff's gone up, delivery's gone up, fuel's gone up, things like that. I know a lot of that has to do with you guys trying to keep it, and then also my dealer's, when I talked to her about it, she was fantastic. She was like, if it's something, a cost that we can eat, we just eat it and then keep that price the same. Cause I think in at least 2 years, they haven't had a price increase, and I'm still paying $13.49. So $13.50 a bag through all that. A lot of that has to do with the dealer. She was telling me like, it can go up some, but we'll try to eat that to keep the price. That's just what we do. So, but she was great about it. And when you hear people paying, $19.50 a bag or $23 a bag, which at one of my other local stores, we were getting like $23, $10 more a bag. And I'm just, so that's other things I'm going to talk about when we have our meeting here in the next couple of weeks about capitalizing on things for Chick Days. When you've got some of these feeds that are $5 to even $10 more per bag, it's insane. So, this has been great. We've kind of right out of the gate covered the corn for winter warmth factor fiction. Now I've got more information from another expert to share when I'm answering questions about this or replying to folks that recommend this. I'm like, not so fast. Let's listen to this podcast and then listen to this podcast about why that may not be such a great idea. And then we really went down a couple of rabbit holes about, feed and nutrition and winter nutrition and science about how this works and why corn may not even be on the top of the list if you're trying to generate heat for your birds in the wintertime. There may be other things that would be better. So it was great. Is there anything there in front of you on your outline? Because we did deviate a little bit, but it was all kind of relative towards nutrition and feed. Anything else on your outline regarding the topic for today you want to get through?
Yeah, I think just, you know, going back to what you said in the intro about how much heat that birds produce themselves, and I can, you know, just give a couple examples of that from my experience. And, you know, one was I went to West Virginia University for my bachelor's and master's, and so there for several years, and we did organic poultry research. And so we had several little houses, and they're, you know, surrounded by pasture, and the birds went out, for most of the day and then came in at night. And in West Virginia in the winter, I mean, we'd have a lot of days and nights in the teens or even single digits. There was one year where there was at least a little bit of snow on the ground from October through March. And the birds were fine, and they grew fine, and they were healthy, and like you said, they're very social. They like to, get up close to each other and cuddle up, and they're covered in feathers. I think sometimes, we forget that. And another time,
And heat, as we know, is far more stressful to these birds than the cold ever will be all day long. In the summertime, when you have heat, that's going to be so much stressful for the bird than, say, you know, the cold nights. And you think about it, I mean, just if you look at the history of this country, you know, in most areas of the country, I mean, most rural areas have only had electricity for between 100 and 125 years. So you think about your great grandparents anywhere in the country that had a flock of chickens. They didn't have electricity, and we've been raising chickens in this country for however many hundreds of years, thousands, you know, and we have only had electricity to put heaters in the coop, which we don't recommend for 125 years. So it's, chickens have been doing fine for 1,000 years without heaters in their coop. So we dwell on that a lot in the wintertime. So, they got that high body temperature. They got the feathers. And I had a great picture comparison. I had a picture of my coop. It's 10 by 20. And one whole end of it is nothing but roosts. And there's a lot. I mean, maybe 100 birds, whatever it was. And they were all in there. They were all, you know, kind of cuddling from one side to the other. And people were like, oh, they're crammed in. They're all smooshed up against each other. You know, you always have a few that have to be negative Nellies. What I did was when I reduced my flock a little bit, I may have had maybe even less than half when I took that picture. And I went back same time of the day. They had all gone up to roost. And let's say I had 40 birds instead of, say, 100 or 120. And I went back and got a picture. And they were doing the same thing. Instead of 100 birds, you know, that were all there up against each other and every roost was taken, now I had like three or four empty roosts, and the remaining birds were all on two roosts slap up against each other. So I share that picture. I'm like, for those of you who think that this was, you know, whatever, inhumane, or this was, they look, there's no room, or look how smushed they look. I said, now they've got, you know, see, 8, 8, 8, you know, 30 linear feet of empty roost space that this bird could use. But no, what are they doing? They're all on two roosts. Yeah. There's four more available to them, but they're all on two, right smack dab next to each other, because that's the way they like it. So it was a great picture comparison to show folks that this is what they do, roost space availability or not.
I think part of it is, you see some of these pastured or free-range eggs at the store, and they, you know, say an acre per bird or something, and so people think they, you know, needs to be like raising cattle or something, but they might have an acre per bird, but they're all going to be right with each other. They like having friends.
Yeah, and the same thing with, like, the too small for that amount of birds. But, again, they the sun barely cracks over the horizon, and they're all outside of the coop. They're all out there roaming around, whatever, and then they're out there. When are they really in the coop? When they're in the nest box, when they're laying. That's before they go out for the day in most cases. And then overnight, that's it. I mean, when else are they in the coop? You know, we can go out and look at my coop at any time during the day, and there might be out of, you know, 50 birds, there might be six in there getting some food or some water. Maybe one's in the nest box, you know, but the rest of the time they're out 13 acres roaming around, or even if you have a run that's 10 by 20. You know, they're out there.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, how you know, you don't need 10 square feet per bird inside your coop because they're not in there very often. And that's
right.
Why I kind of segue here. That's why the roost is so important. You get the design right and you check it for any type of splinters or cracks or crevices, because if you think about it, the birds are on that roost for half their life from dusk until dawn. They are on that roost. That's half their life. So probably half their poop's going to be below the roost. But half their life, you know, think about it. If you were going to spend half your life in an easy recliner or lazy boy, imagine how comfortable you want that chair to be if you're going to be in that chair half your life. So that's, you know, segue there is how important these roosts are for the birds, because they're on it practically half their life. So, great. Fantastic show today. We it was very enjoyable. Lots of information was shared, kind of doing Mythbusters again, but not just because I say so, but just like Dr. Pateski did, you backed it up with science of why your opinion is this is not something that's really on the up and up. You know, like we always say, you do you, I do me, but here's information about this particular topic. Take it or leave it, but now you have the science behind why it may not be recommended. So now they know. So perfect. But thanks a lot. I will I'll probably have a meeting with the team before our next show, you and I, which would be I'm trying to look here at the date here, which would end up being October 28th, and I've got surgery October 25th. So we may not have you back until maybe November. Or we may try to fit you in the week before, but the 28th of October, I've got surgery that week and probably won't be feeling up 3 days later of doing a show. But we'll either have you on the week before or maybe into the first part of November.
Okay. That sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and then we're looking forward to the article for the winter issue, which is going to be on this topic. So you'll have diagrams, like you said, to make it a little bit visually easier to understand kind of what's going on, and people can just read it versus trying to listen and comprehend. It'll all be right in front of them. So folks, make sure you get the winter issue of Chicken Whisperer magazine. So Dr. Kieran Gehring with Tucker Milling, thank you so much for joining us today and shedding some light on the corn for winter warmth fact or fiction topic. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. You have a good one. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Hey, thanks, Andy. Bye.
All righty. That's what we do here, whether it be pumpkin seeds not being a non-natural dewormer for chickens, or corn for winter warmth, fact or fiction, or let's just load them up with protein because they're molting. All these myths that have gone viral because somebody shared it on their little blog, or someone shared it in a room, and then other people pick up on it, and then other people share it because they saw it somewhere, and no one ever posts any studies or any kind of proof. You say, well, where did you hear that? Oh, I heard it on a blog. And then it just goes viral. So that's what we do here. That's why we have a book called Chicken Fact or Chicken Poop that takes a lot of these viral myths that you see, and we have experts like Curran and Maurice and Bridget and everybody else to come in and kind of debunk those. And that's a lot of times what we do here on the podcast as well. So if you want to see Curran's article and you haven't already, we want to make sure you subscribe to the totally free digital edition of Chicken Whisperer Magazine. And just go to chickenwhisperermagazine.com. You'll be able to see every single article we've ever done in the last 8 years for free. Read them all from poultry scientists, poultry nutritionists, poultry veterinarians, not me just touting, hey, this is what I do because I've done it for 30 years. And you can subscribe there for free to the digital edition. And, of course, if you like a real magazine delivered to your house, so you can have a catalog there of all this great information, You can do that too, $9.95 per year, cheaper than any other chicken magazine out there. And look who's writing for them. Look who's writing for us. There's no comparison, folks. So we hope you do that. And
welcome to Backyard Poultry with
the wrong button. I need to do show closing, not show intro. So thank you very much for tuning in today, and we'll see you next week on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
This has been Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tucker Milling, with your host, Andy Schneider. For more information, find us on the web at chickenwhisperer.com, on Facebook by typing in The Chicken Whisperer, on Twitter at Backyard Poultry, and on Instagram at The Real Chicken Whisperer. Thanks for listening.